Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 111 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to cover this week's nerd news. We're going to begin an entertainment talk with some movie pushbacks and some streaming movie news, as well as some gaming news. And then we'll jump over into tech and talk about some recent hacking threats, autonomous vehicles, and some court cases surrounding big tech. There is a lot to get to. And we're going to get started.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
And welcome back to episode 111. And this is a busy week in news that we've got up ahead of us. So I guess let's jump right into some of these topics here. Yeah,
no time to dilly-dally. Let's go.
No small talk today. let's get going right into really, we talked last week about there were some movie delays. I don't even remember. You know, every week there's new movie delays. I don't remember exactly which ones we talked about last week. And we were pretty much saying 2020 is over. And even 2021 was looking really bad, and we're saying nothing was on the slate until March. And then you reminded us that, well, there was Wonder Woman and Dune still technically there in December, and we both kind of chuckled about, well, for now. And that for now lasted about 24 hours after we recorded.
Yeah, I'm at the point where I don't even want to talk about this shit anymore. Like, I think I'm just jinxing everything at this point. Dune hurts, man. Just because they released that bomb-ass Dune trailer during Tenet. So, like, right as Tenet came out and I'm starting to get back in this, you know, to the theaters and, like, this is going to be good. And you see the Dune trailer, like, oh, you know, now here's some new movies coming out this year still that we got to look forward to. And, yeah, now they're just going to keep it in the can for another year, man.
I mean, like, yeah, they pushed it back to October 21. I mean, people aren't even looking at the spring of 21 anymore. Everything's getting pushed deep, as at least the major blockbuster movies are getting pushed really deep.
So I'm wondering if this is like a move because they figure, all right, even if Corona, say, ends next spring, that people are still just going to have like Corona aftershocks, you know, of like not wanting to do things and not wanting to mask, you know, wear masks, even if we have a widespread vaccine and whatnot, that they still think there's going to be some residual fears. Or if this is them saying, look, push it back a year. If Corona ends in February, we could always release it in March. Like, no, you know, there's no one's going to stop them from saying, you know what, guess what? No, what we lied. We're going to release it in 3 weeks. Here's a big media campaign.
Yeah. I mean, I think they could potentially bump them up. I really don't foresee it happen. I think exactly what you described is they're going to be afraid that they're, even if they open, they're not going to catch full capacity theaters anytime soon. So, you know, they saw what happened to Tenet. And they're just following that lead of, all right, well, there's no point. If we get these big blockbusters, there's no point. You know, Wonder Woman's still technically, I think, slated for December. I haven't seen anything that officially moved it back.
I told you, shut the fuck up, man. Why did you guys say it out loud?
Yeah, like, rumors are that that's going video on demand. You know, there's all kinds of rumors coming out this week. So nothing official, but I could see it happening at this point. If they haven't pushed it back, I could see it doing a simultaneous video on demand, limited theater release.
Fuck, man. This is not looking good for moviegoers. Yeah.
But then we got, you know, other movies that got pushed back, like The Batman, which we know hit like production delays because Robert Pattinson himself caught coronavirus and they had to shut down the production or whatever else. And that thing is already pushed back to 2022 now. Yeah, so,
like, we're getting
way more time for us to speculate on bat suits and Batmobiles.
Yeah. Like, not even 2021. Like, it's amazing to hear how far back some of these are getting pushed. And then we got, like, Matrix 4 getting pushed up. Like, they're going to release it early. And you can, like, almost collectively hear every moviegoer just go, like,
sure. Sure,
this
buddy.
This is delayed, but Matrix 4 is going to come out sooner, and they're just like, man.
yeah, we're not going to believe any of that. I mean, it's just, yeah, movie after movie getting pushed back. You know, The Batman's pushed back, Flash's pushed back, Dune's pushed back. You know, Matrix 4 is that I guess that silver lining that maybe we get that movie sooner. But
I think Black this Adam is going to pave the way for TV shows to take the reins of big production, big name actors. Like I think this might be where you know, when football overtook baseball, you know, baseball was always America's sport, and then football just came blazing through and never looked back. This might be the same thing. Now you're going to have these 8-part miniseries that don't have a second season, that are just eight parts long. And
you don't say. I mean, because it happened to be that today Disney did a talk over about their CEO on their entertainment department as a whole, and they announced today that their primary focus from this point on in time, they have merged their media departments, where it used to be streaming and stuff as one separate arm, and they've merged their media departments and have said that their primary focus is absolutely streaming services, straight to consumer services. So, you know, Disney being one of the primary drivers of everything entertainment, they said it's not a full-on like reaction to COVID, but it's definitely related, right? But they said that no matter what, the next era of entertainment was direct to consumer. That's why everybody has their own streaming service now. That's why everybody's controlling their own platform. This is why it took a loss on Disney Plus this year, and they're going to probably take a loss for a couple years on it. But the future is direct to consumer. They don't care. Like, they're still going to release movies to the theater, but it's now second fiddle to what they can provide direct to consumer. There's higher profit margins there.
Yeah, I just don't understand. So we get these articles all the time about why Netflix cancels their shows now, and like the kind of math that goes into figuring these things. And they basically said it's because when they get the first season on Netflix, they get all these actors for cheap. By the fourth season, it is really expensive to produce these shows especially if they're successful, they're winning Emmys, they're highly acclaimed. It's really hard to show profit in these shows because they can't up the ad revenue sales. You know what I mean? So like they have a fixed amount of money that they get every year from subscriptions. So if the shows keep getting more expensive, they can't justify just raising rates on every subscription service. So, I mean, is that where the wall we're going to hit now with every show we love? That if we're not, If too many people find out about your show, people are not going to recommend shows anymore because I really like this show. I don't need everybody watching this motherfucker. They're going to cancel it after the third season then.
I mean, it's very possible. You know, watch out, Stranger Thing kids. Like, go ahead and keep asking for raises and see what happens to everybody's beloved show. I don't know. Maybe it's going to change. You know, the Screen Actors Guild's going to have to start doing like the NFL and doing rookie contracts, and you get 7 guaranteed seasons at rookie prices, and then after that, it goes up. Like, you know, the renegotiating per season, maybe Netflix finds a way around that, and maybe Netflix finds a way to, hey, they're going to lock people up in these longer term contracts. Well,
I think this is just going to push it more towards the Peacock model, where you have three forms of service. You got the free model, where you basically don't get shit. You got the $4.99 model, where you get shit but you have ads. And then you have the $9.99 model, or $14.99 model, which is no ads.
Netflix said that they will never do ads. They continue to say that.
And George Bush said no new taxes, and we all know how that went. people say shit to keep you around. I don't see that. I don't see the business model surviving if we're moving to streaming the way we're going to move, and the lack of revenue that's going to happen from box offices and from advertisements. These are two huge revenue generators for studios that are creating these TV shows and movies. So once you cut those two out, you are at a finite amount of money that you can spend on these budgets. Like, I don't see this being ultimately good for content.
I still think it's going to be a net positive in the sense of the sheer amount of content that could be made. The fact that, I mean, we see that Netflix is able to do things that, you know, other services couldn't. Amazon Prime could do things that other services couldn't, right? I just watched the finale of The Boys the other day. Nobody else was going to be able to touch that, right? Other than like an HBO and stuff. Like, I think we're still in the golden age of what is going to be long form, you know, multiple episode high quality things where a TV is not just kind of something you just watch casually, but it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, but like we're getting movie quality storylines. Just like how we're getting the last season of Ozarks, because that show's getting really expensive to produce. And they're like, look, we, you know, it's not that they couldn't write a couple more seasons. Like, no, it's just not profitable for Netflix to run those seasons anymore. So
HBO was always that way too, though. HBO had great shows. How many of them went 10 seasons? And, you know what I mean?
HBO also doesn't have commercials and runs on subscription base. This is their same folly.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the end, you know, Netflix has got to save some money, because, you know, we'll just go ahead and transition into the next one. And Netflix has to keep that litigation money, keep those lawyers on retainer, so that way they can keep bringing out questionable content like Cuties, which they were just indicted in Texas for. It's, I guess it's a French film, but Cuties that they produced. And they were indicted for lewd depiction of kids in Texas.
Yeah, we're pretty much just going over this because everybody's kind of in a hubbub about this and talking about this, and it falls kind of into our streaming entertainment news. And
I find it interesting.
Neither one of us have watched Cuties. I have two young daughters. I am not going to watch this film. But it is kind of interesting now that they're going to be in litigation for something they put up on their streaming service, and it's going to be interesting to see where this plays out, because are they going to claim the same thing like Facebook claims, like, look, man, we're just a platform, we just put it out there, you can indict the creator of the movie, like, but we're just a platform that shows movies, we didn't got nothing to do with it.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about is you know, in the end, yes, it's a Netflix original, but Netflix didn't make it necessarily. Just chose to play it. I don't know how much liability do they have here. And yeah, I'll never watch it. I like watched the, you know, like the autoplay trailer of it, and it's like the story is whatever. It's a girl struggling to find herself. Like, I get it. Like, the story in itself, there's a message behind the story that is not about girls twerking and shaking their ass, little kids. I don't know why they had to go that direction. Yeah. It's a French film, so I'm sure they're just looking at us as a bunch of prude Americans who, like, not a big deal to them.
No, there's a website, though, that you could type on your computer that puts a bunch of little red dots on your map that shows you of all the people that touch little fucking boys and girls in your neighborhood. And to me, this is just something that we don't need to put out into the world to you know, entice those red dot people.
No, yeah, I definitely don't want the algorithm associating me with this, so I'll skip it every single time.
I'm not typing it in my search bar.
But I don't know. It's going to be interesting litigation just off of the fact of how much liability does Netflix have for what's
going on. Yeah, I'm interested in Netflix's defense, because they can take the same exact defense that Facebook takes on everything. Yeah,
we
censor it and we do this, but hey, we're just a platform. We're just here so you can hit play on whatever you want. If you watched it, that's on you.
Yeah. And if anybody thinks that this is going to end in a Texas court, they've lost their mind. Like, this is step one. This is going to go to higher courts of appeals.
Oh, for sure.
Regardless, whether Netflix wins or they lose and the state continues to press it, or it goes to different charges. So no matter what, this is going to be seen by higher courts, in my uneducated legal opinion here.
I've been watching a lot of Suits, and I agree.
I've seen all of Suits. So yeah, I don't know. Let's move out of the awkward topic of Cuties and, you know, we can just talk a little bit about some potential upcoming kind of series and just entertainment stuff. We can talk about a beloved franchise of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It looks like it's heading down a dark R-rated path with The Last Ronin, which, good.
They broke the story arc of this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it just got really everybody kind of excited to see where this goes. And a lot of speculation is already going on. All for it, man. Put it out. Let's go.
Yeah. Let's get R-rated middle-aged turtles.
we all grown now.
Teenage turtles. Let's
give me a He-Man that swears. Give me a G.I. Joe that blows limbs off of people. Like, give me all the R-rated 80s content you possibly can. I mean, we grew up with Schwarzenegger and Commando and Rambos and, like, let's not act like we all didn't watch those movies as a kid and then we just got to gloss over our childhood. No, No, give me all the hard R's. Red Band trailers all around.
Well, and then we could another show or series that's been approved as they're moving forward with a Green Lantern series on HBO Max. This follows a couple weeks ago about, DC Universe getting shut down, all DC content getting moved over to HBO Max. So Green Lantern is now going to add into, Titans and Doom Patrol and those other shows that survived through DC Universe and are moved over to HBO Max.
Please let HBO be their saving grace. Like, because Green Lantern has so much potential to be good.
It really does. So and much I'm hoping potential HBO just makes it an actual mature adult type.
For any DC fan that listens to our show and hears the way I speak upon your beloved franchise, I am rooting for you right now. I'm telling you right now, I am rooting for this to be good. I do not want to see you take all the L's that you take. I really don't. I bask in it. I laugh at you for it, but I'm on your side.
Just leave the Arrowverse behind at the CW. Yeah. Grow Let up from the kid stuff over there and start making like actual quality shows around these great characters that DC has. And I'm hoping that this Green Lantern series that's got some heavyweights as far as the showrunners behind it, I'm hoping they produce something good over there at HBO. Yeah.
Just hire a bunch of actors without TikTok accounts. And make a good fucking show.
All right, but I think that takes us through really we just kind of rushed through some entertainment here, maybe not rushed to it, but we can go over into a little bit of gaming. We've got a couple big gaming stories, one being this partnership that GameStop and Microsoft have just signed up with, which is a really interesting kind of combination.
Yeah, this team up
here. I'm glad to see it happen. GameStop is one of those stores that was doomed to just disappear. Like,
you're happy to see it?
I am glad. So
GameStop is not Toys R Us, okay? Like, let's put that aside. Let's put this out there.
I don't know where you're going with it. Toys R Us anymore, but I was sad that Toys R Us went away.
Yeah, because we all wanted to be a Toys R Us kid. GameStop ain't got no catchy fucking theme song. GameStop don't have a fucking mascot.
No, but I can't drive past a game. Like, if it goes away, by the time my kids are teenagers, I can't drive past a GameStop with my kids and be like, I used to sell games for 50 cents on a dollar over there.
See that? Abandoned store. They used to rob me. Yeah, anytime I was broke as hell.
I was so desperate that I would bring in 7 games and walk out with $4.50.
why are you defending these people? Why are you? And I just don't understand what's Microsoft buying them for. We are putting out discless consoles now. Do they not realize that they're producing the products that will put their investment out of business?
So a part of the announcement was there was a bunch of things that Microsoft is trying to add into GameStop now. A part of it is a lot of like Xbox exclusive things that will be purchased only at GameStop, or pre-orders and stuff are only going to be authorized at GameStop. They even talked about like allowing GameStop to do almost like financing plans for people to pre-order consoles. Well,
I think
and stuff
this
like
is because a while back they announced they were closing down all the Microsoft stores.
And then that's what I was going to say. And then all the GameStop spaces are getting converted kind of into Microsoft stores in the sense that they're going to have not non-game related Microsoft hardware. And then it even talked about how like the GameStop cashiers or the people who are working there, the associates, are all going to be given Surface tablets. So they're not going to necessarily even like have a cash register anymore. They're going to walk around. They're going to be able to take people's payment just walking around through the store with their Surface tablets. Like, they're trying to make it a Microsoft store that sells video games.
And then they just got a corner
and 10 cents
back
on the dollar for old games.
They just got a back corner that's dimly lit and smells like shit where they sell all the PlayStation stuff. They just got stained carpet and bad lighting, and it's back in the corner, and they just constantly spray fart spray in the back.
I mean, so I think it's a really weird announcement and team up, but it jumped like GameStop stock like 50% a day because everybody thought GameStop was on its way out and filing for bankruptcy here soon, and it at least breathed a little life into GameStop for a little while. I don't know if this I don't see what benefit this was for Microsoft very much, but okay.
Well, basically got them to rebrand. So the Microsoft stores, there was one in the mall by my house, and I occasionally would walk in because, you know, I'm an Xbox person, and I don't own many Apple products. All I own is an iPhone. My toddler just broke my iPad. I'm out an iPad now, so I literally have one Apple device. I never really got into the, you know, Apple store kind of like trend. And I think that's what they were going with the Microsoft store. So they wanted to have a competition between, you know, the two major brands. And the Microsoft store, just as the Zune went, never fucking caught on and just went fucking nowhere. So I think this is just them a way to rebrand the Microsoft store and latch on to a name that's already well established and known. Hated, but known.
I don't know if they're trying to anchor themselves tighter into the kind of like being synonymous with gaming. It rebrands them as like, you know, Microsoft is the gaming choice. It does make sense, I guess, from a gaming.
It's interesting,
naming and brand perspective, but I can't imagine it bringing any kind of real like immediate profitability to Microsoft, and it's a money pit. But whatever, they I'm sure have a strategy in line, and I'm sure they got it relatively cheap.
Well, I'm wondering if they're if they start upping some of the payouts for old systems and shit, if you buy a new Xbox, like, you know, they because they're such a big corporation, they might be able to take a bigger hit, you know, on the resales to encourage new sales, you know, so they take a 5% loss on a, you know, console just because you're trading it in and buying a Series X, you know. I can see a couple of things that they do to try to maybe some eggheads in some office somewhere crunch these fucking numbers, and I'm assuming they work out long term.
Like I said, they didn't buy GameStop. You know, it's just a partnership that's breathing in new, you know, money and life into GameStop. So who knows? It's probably a little downside for Microsoft in the end. But I don't know. I guess we can, some other. Well, before I go into actually like real news, I'm going to just transition to a funny story regarding the review for FIFA 21 or the legacy FIFA 20. Did you see this review or did you see this article about IGN?
It's the one for Switch. For Switch.
And it's great. The fact that, so FIFA essentially did absolutely no work on the Switch. They just don't care. It comes down to the fact that there's very few like real gamers playing, you know, FIFA and Madden and stuff on the Switch. If you're going to play those games, you're probably playing it on other consoles. So all they did was just repackage previous year's games, just change some names on jerseys.
Did a roster update, man. Just did a roster update. That's all they did.
And then they sold it and like completely just put it on its website that's all they were doing, was just repackaging the game. There were no updates to gameplay or performance. And major game reviewers, IGN, all they did was say, well, because FIFA really didn't bother to correct the game, fix the game, or make any changes, we made zero changes to our review, and they just copy and pasted their previous year's review into this year's review, which I think is great. That's great.
Yeah.
Just don't buy FIFA on Nintendo Switch. It's a waste of 60 bucks.
They flat out said it, too. Like, we had made no changes to this game. It's like, okay. Like, thanks. if the only system you have is a Switch and you care about soccer so much, you got to have that new Tottenham player on your squad. Like, I get it. Okay. Spend the 50 bucks. Like, I don't see it value in it, but yeah, I've spent 50 bucks on worse.
Yeah. Well, I won't be buying it, but now we can talk about real news. But the only other real news in gaming, that kind of, you know, puts us one foot into tech, as we'll transition into kind of tech news here, is that the Department of Justice was able to arrest and some significant, you know, mod chip makers that, you know, Nintendo has been filing suit against these individuals. It's been a big issue for years for the console makers, specifically Nintendo, as far as people making, you know, mods to play different ROM games, you know, the old Nintendo games and all these things that you can do with the systems, making these mod chips. And they've they've gone after the individuals who make this homebrew software that allows you to play various games or whatever else.
I feel partly responsible for this because in the Cantina group, I've been going hard against PlayStation's anti-backwards compatibility kind of thing. And you get all those PC people that are just like, why do you care about backwards compatibility? You can play all these games if you just have a basic computer and a mod. And it's like, yeah, buddy. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
This is why I give a fuck about backwards compat.
Yeah, it's, you know, so in the end, you know, the Department of Justice, they were able to hone in on a couple of these individuals, three individuals.
That little sticker that's on your cartridge, that little sticker that's on your cartridge that is a bunch of legal jargon, it actually fucking means something. Like, they're coming after your asses.
Yeah, so they caught two of the three that they had actual charges filed against, and they're gonna... It's been a big blow to people who, you know, follow this closely as far as, you know, actually being able to catch these individuals, actually being able to charge them. And we'll see what happens here, you know, as Homebrew was a big, you know, one as far as creating this ability to play old games on the Switch itself or the Wii, you know, back when everybody was modding those out. So, I you know, if you ask people like... I don't know, Cory Doctorow would say jailbreaking and modding your Nintendo or whatever else, that should in no way be illegal. You own it. Do whatever the hell you want with it. There should be nothing that restricts you from making modifications to something that you own. Legal action says otherwise. And here we go with some arrests. And then, that will go from kind of that bit of mod chip hacking into consoles into... actual hacking news, as we can talk about, the FBI put out a kind of notice this week about drive-by hacking being a true and real threat. We've talked about this in several different iterations when we talk about different IoT devices, your Internet of Thing devices, which is just about everything in a house nowadays, you know, from your thermostats to the cameras around, to your doorbell, to whatever assistant listening device you allow into your home. All of those IoT devices, they come with significant security flaws just kind of built into them. They're just not very well secured. Their firmware updates are slow. Oftentimes they don't get real-time or updated firmware updates. So there's different exploits that aren't regularly patched. It almost requires like user interaction to sometimes patch these or get them the necessary firmware updates to protect them. So they're not security forward thinking, the companies that make them, which makes them far less secure than you would hope, bringing them into your home. And the FBI has brought into this real threat that there's been an uptick in these kind of like drive-by hackings. I envision this as, you know, the dude in the panelist van driving with like four of his buddies in the back, just scanning all the houses as he's driving by, looking for open
clickers.
Yeah. Like just looking for, you know, somebody's, you know, Ring camera to get into, somebody's, you know,
well,
whatever is going
to
provide
my understanding, you know, from the conversations we've had with people, that the IoT devices, their security is weak. But it's like the lock on your bathroom door, right? Yeah, the bathroom door can lock, but it's easy to take like the toothpick or just anything straight, push it in the hole, push the spring, and open that door. So the main thing is your router, your main networking password and login. If that is tight, that is the deadbolt on your front door. How shitty your bathroom door lock shouldn't fucking matter if you lock the front fucking door. So lock your front door, people. Don't make your home network password your Yorkie's name plus your address. Like, don't make it something easily figured out. Make it something hard. Write it on a post-it if you have to. But to my understanding, that's kind of exactly what it's like. We have all these Internet of Things, like, devices, they all have like minimal security on it, because the idea is that you're going to have the big fucking front gate stop it from ever getting to the point where that password and that security is needed.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true for every device. You know, there's different ways for that that they're able to still kind of connect into these devices.
Well, the only other way is to not go through your home network. It's to just figure out your email and your password. So if you use the same password for everything and Target has a big data leak and your login and password for your Target Home Goods account is the same login for your bank account, your same login for your Nest or your Amazon or whatever. Yeah, that's how you fucked up too. Like, to my understanding, there's only two ways you can fuck up. Like, don't fuck those two things up. Like, and you're good.
Yeah, I do think, again, I do think it's more complicated than that in the sense of, there are examples of these devices not receiving firmware updates or whatever else that people are able to kind of root into them through different means. Yes, ultimately, just turn on two-factor authentication on everything you can. Make sure you have strong passwords. Make sure you have unique passwords for each system, for each thing. And if you can, put all of your Internet of Things devices on one network, on one router, on one specific network, and then access the internet on a different one. And that would be the ideal situation there.
So regarding all these passwords and everything, this just reminds me of, so I got a new iPhone before I left for Vegas 2 weeks ago, and it's the 11. So it's the first phone I've had that went away from the thumbprint to the facial recognition.
Ah.
And I just realized another way Corona has fucked my life is that every time I need to unlock my phone, I have to take off my goddamn mask and have it recognize my fucking face. And I go goddamn nuts every day trying to get into my fucking phone with these masks on. And yeah, it just talking about all these passwords and how, like, it's like, yeah, just turn on two-factor authentication. And then in my head, I just picture myself bitching and screaming every time I have to rip the mask off my face to log into my fucking phone and wonder why people don't have the two-factor on.
Well, that's a little bit of a first world problem there that we're all facing here with all these Internet of Things devices. But
yeah, this whole story is a first world problem.
Yeah, with all of us fighting these Internet of Things, whatever else, I get it. But in the end, we're all better off just by providing some level of security. And I think everybody's at this point in time just needs to know every Internet of Things device you bring into your life, you're accepting some level of security risk. Like, just don't go into it thinking that they are well protected, which means that you actually have to take the steps to ensure that you aren't a victim of some drive-by hacking.
Yeah, lock the front door.
All right, and then, you know, in just some more hacking news, we already talked about Microsoft earlier, but we can give some kudos to Microsoft, not only just for saving the beloved or infamous GameStop, yeah, but we also get Microsoft, which is now credited for taking down a significant hacking operation. This is a ransomware company, or not company, but network of hackers that they're responsible or being claimed as responsible for things like the hacking that we talked about a couple weeks ago for the United Health Services, as well as various other corporations that they've provided ransomware and then sought and sometimes have been paid out various ransoms for holding hostage their servers, their functionality of their systems, whatever it happens to be. And Microsoft identified some servers that they were using. They filed through federal courts in order to legally disable their IP addresses. And then they were authorized to do so. So they shut down TrickBot's servers. This was also kind of in conjunction or working with U.S. Cyber Command. And they're looking just to disrupt their operations. This isn't going to, you know, it's a network of hackers. They didn't catch anybody. This isn't going to prevent them from setting up shop or establishing new servers. But it's a delay, maybe for a short period of time here. Some ransomware has been slightly delayed due to efforts from Microsoft.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't understand exactly how, is this protecting their own interests? Is this them trying to get good PR? You know, was this, I just don't understand how they became like the Batman of the internet in this case.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I imagine it's good for business. It's good for business when people have faith in their computing platforms and that you are largely, you know, reliant on people operating on and within, and they should have some faith in your systems. So I'm sure it's all about, yeah, good PR.
Well, I'm just glad that Bill Gates took a second away from injecting the world with nanobots through vaccines to stop this hack.
I was wondering where you're going with that. All right. All right. Well, no better way to transition out of hacking news. If we can just go into a little bit of futurism here and talk about a video regarding some, you know, Fast Company car, or this car article by Fast Company, wrote about this car company that is really trying to show the fact that electric vehicles are, like, we have to rethink how the vehicle is made altogether as we progress into electric vehicles. And essentially what they've demonstrated is that what they're making is vehicles that are just essentially skateboards. They're just a big flat battery. All of the motors exist within the wheel hubs themselves. And it's just a flat platform that you could build whatever you want on it. Like this concept that you need to, you know, go with the Ford assembly lines and just mass produce the same exact car because it's so complex with so many moving parts and axles and transmissions and everything. It needs to be stacked and worked around. It's like, no, we could just create a flat platform. And anybody can make a minivan off of there. They can make a cargo van off of this flat platform. They could just ride it around as a skateboard if they really wanted to.
Yeah, there's a video attached to this article that you could watch and see these cars moving around and how thin the platform is that actually powers these four wheels to get around. And the one big one, I kind of almost wanted to see like four of those shitty Target white lawn chairs like duct taped to it with people sitting on it. Like I just kind of wanted to see the most bootleg version of it that you could while watching the video. But it is really interesting, and I've said this a million times to people that fight me on electric cars being the future and how we need to move away from fossil fuels. Like if you were to wipe the slate clean and say invent the car right now, like there's never been a car, we're all riding horses yesterday, we need a car today, the last thing you would think of is like, all right, we need these eight metal cylinders and have these tiny explosions in them going off every millisecond in order to power this, to spin this rod that's going to spin these eight fucking rods, and then that's going to look like it's such an asinine goddamn concept. Like, I understand how we got here. At one point, you know, we only had a limited technology on how to do it, and we progressed all the way to 2020 with the combustion engine, and here we are. I get it, okay? But at any moment we want to, we can say there's got to be a better way to do this, and that's pretty much what these guys did on video. It's like, hey y'all, all that shit that you were steering around every day on the fucking highway, you don't need none of that shit. You don't need none of that shit. Just this flat panel, these four wheels, and you could go wherever you want. Like it's fine, guys. And I that's my big takeaway from this, is just like, let's reinvent the fucking car and the capabilities. Yeah. Like, let's do it. Let's
just take these flat platforms and they're just little flat platforms that you could just lift and pick up whatever you want. So you, instead of like even bothering like recharging or whatever else, you just swap your platform of minivan upper like third row seating that you felt like you needed for your family. Just put it on a new fully charged platform. It should be. There's a lot of ways to creatively think about.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to Elon talk about it. I've listened to a lot of other people talk about the future of cars, and it almost angers me that we're not like going on that way, especially when it comes to like autonomous driving. Like the one, you know, a lot of people have talked about. You know, you buy this $40,000 piece of machine, and you're really only in it for a few hours a day. Other than that, it's sitting in a parking lot at work. It's sitting in your garage. It's doing nothing for you. The minute autonomous driving becomes like widely accepted, my car could be Ubering for me 16 hours a day, making me money. And while I'm at home feeding my kids, while I'm at like anytime I'm not using my car, you just hit the Uber button on the dash and it leaves the crib and it starts driving people around and pulls back up. And it's like, yeah, I just made you $250 today. It's like, thanks, car. Like, wait not to waste the space and earn your fucking place at my house. Like, I just, there's so many concepts that we could be implementing on the automobile, and yet we're still burning dead dinosaurs around. It's so fucked up.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're going to maybe hear less from Tesla on this front and the innovations going forward, as Tesla this week supposedly dismantled or eliminated its PR department altogether.
I mean, so, honestly, I think this is genius, just because they're nothing they come up with in those board meetings equals one Elon Musk tweet.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's pretty much what it is. So I think, yeah, they just said, well, instead of us taking questions for people, we just won't anymore. And we'll just let Elon's tweet stand, and we'll set up our own weird events like Battery Day that nobody really knows what the purpose of it is when they show up. And it's all going to be fine.
This all started when Elon threw a giant metal ball through a window that wasn't supposed to break. And he's like, you're all fucking, he's like, they were all on the plank at that moment, from that moment on.
Yeah. And, I don't know. It's an odd move for any, you know, I don't know. Is he back in the Fortune 500? I know it went up and down when their stock prices were high, whether they were in the Fortune 500 again.
I just read an article today about them bouncing back, after a lot of the S&P stuff talks that they had.
Yeah, but either way, no more PR department, which I think the favorite part of the article from the New York Post is where the last sentence that they put, that they reached out to Tesla for a statement, but they did not immediately get a response. Well, no shit, they don't have a PR department. Who did you reach out to?
Yeah, they canceled their emails account, you dumbass.
Like, who did you reach out to?
This shit's not getting forwarded.
You just tweet at Elon Musk? Is that what reaching out to Tesla is now?
Santa Claus, you fucking moron. What the fuck's wrong with you? You wrote the article. Like, you answered yourself. Like, what the fuck is wrong with
that's,
you?
That's my favorite part of the whole article. But
yeah, no. Right, well, anytime they need something, they're just gonna have Elon tank his own stock or smoke a joint on a podcast, and everything will be fine.
I mean, it's working. I mean, why break what's working? It's gonna be fine. All right, let's move into some big tech, and when we're looking at the big tech companies, there was some hints coming out of the House's antitrust department that they're hinting at breaking up parts of big tech companies, and I think most people would say, okay, about time, right? Like, you know, people complaining about these companies being absolutely huge. I know one of them that was coming out of it was like the fact that there was talk about Google might have to sell Chrome, as in it just doesn't, like, if you are the biggest search provider, you also shouldn't have your own web browser that prioritizes your own search and everything else, that they're looking at that as violating antitrust laws. So, you know, that's one breakup that they're looking at potentially forcing onto these companies. So there's a ton, you know, when you look at Facebook owning Instagram and WhatsApp, and you look at, like, there's a lot of
issues here. Frustrating to me about this whole article is that we wouldn't need to break them up if the antitrust committee just did their fucking job in the first place.
We let these acquisitions happen.
Do your fucking job from the get-go, and we wouldn't have to have these discussions.
Yeah. So, you know, in the end, yeah, glad you guys are maybe finally looking at these things in earnest. You know, there's been this concept of, you know, the banks were too big to fail and they had to be bailed out, and now it's kind of like these companies are really, they're just too intertwined to break up. Like, how do you break them up at this point in time? And it's like, well, I don't know, but if you continue to go this direction, things will never improve. So yes, let's dive into this deeper.
Well, they act like they had no clue how this happened. Like, we just woke up one day and four companies owned everything. Like, I don't know how this happened. Like, you fucking people have to sign off on these things. You realize that, right? Like, you have this oversight committee and all these bars and levers that have to get pushed and pulled in order for these big multi-billion-dollar deals to go down, you know, and fucking antitrust has just been like on autopilot since the fucking 90s. And next thing you know, there's like, oh, wow. Yeah. like these people own everything. And, you know, when I start a small business and I want to get it known on Google, it costs me a bunch of money. What is that about? Like, do your fucking job, government.
Yeah. Well, you know, we still have that hearing coming up in the end of October that we'll hear from big tech again over in Congress. Not about antitrust. That's what the last one was about. Was about competition, which obviously the House is now making decisions following that one, where they really kind of tried to dive down into some of these acquisitions, into some of these various cases that that big tech has. The one coming up is more that one is about the Section 230 and their kind of protections around speech and what people post on the platform. So it's a different hearing, but still going to be fascinating as you know, the government's taking big looks at the big four. And then, you know, while the legislators are taking a look at antitrust, the Supreme Court just heard oral arguments on a court case that's almost been a decade in the making. This is Oracle versus Google, and there are huge ramifications that are going to come about what the Supreme Court rules with regards to this.
Yeah, this was hard to kind of like piece together in my brain when I first read it. And a lot of coders know a lot more about it than the normal person. But essentially, what it kind of breaks down to is that all these companies invent all this software, and just like science, a lot of tech is progressive. So I invent this one thing, and then somebody uses my one thing to invent a second thing. And then as we get further and further down the line, we have a lot of these projects. What they're afraid is going to happen with Oracle and Google is that essentially every piece that is built on could essentially have its own separate copyright. And they're afraid of people owning those copyrights or buying up those copyrights and then holding a product that's eight generations down the tech line hostage because they bought the number two thing, you know. So it's basically like you're building a house, you pour the foundation, you put up the framing, you put in the plumbing, the electric, all that. And then when you get to the roof on, you finally go open the keys. The company that put the concrete in is just like, yeah, no, we're revoking your foundation copyright. We're taking it back. Fuck this house. You can't move it.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge case, and I think it's not set to actually have a ruling until June of next year. So these hearings are going to be going on. This was the first of the oral arguments, but yeah. So it's all about the API that Java owns. Oracle owns Java, and it's, you know, so many websites, so many things, programs require use Java. And in the end, when Google created Android, they had to, in order to incorporate, allow Java programs and Java websites and everything else to function on Android, they had to use some of the Java APIs. This wasn't a big deal. Like, people did this all the time. Like, this was just a way that you make... It was a
building block, yeah.
Yeah, this is just the way that you allow kind of interoperability to take place and you allow things to exist. Well, when they did that, you know, Java filed, or not Java, but Oracle filed an $8 billion lawsuit for copyright infringement, saying that each API, each and every individual API is its own intellectual property, its own copyright. It's a huge price tag for Google. But let the Supreme Court rule against Google on this. And what it ends up doing is it opens up, like, this means that, like, all kinds of tech companies have now just been essentially granted patents for APIs that people have just been using open source. Like, this is the whole open source market is based off of the fact that people use APIs for existing software or whatever else to make open source programs that work within your framework, to work within Microsoft, to work within Android, to work within anything else. Some 90-year-old dude
who invented MS-DOS is just like, it's my time! It's my time!
But it will come with significant issues that if this is ruled against it, then yeah, then it opens up the fact
We ran into a similar story like this, what was it, a month ago, you know, in the Fortnite wars. When Apple wanted to remove everything that used the Unreal Engine. And it's like, look, you can't just blanket like these things like that. The implications and the chain that would, you know, go down on if you just took every game that used the Unreal Engine and banned it. Like, you're talking huge implications and fallout from companies that had nothing to do with what's going on, you know? So, they're different instances, but very similar kind of ramifications where one case is just going to ripple across all of tech. And yeah, it's going to be, I can't see them going in Oracle's favor on this just because of that fact.
So, but initially, the initial oral hearings were definitely going in Oracle's favor as far as any independent tech news source, whatever else it was writing about it, was that it was definitely going into the favor of Oracle. You got to remember, you know,
yeah, the people hearing in the this moment, case don't know shit
their
about nothing.
Average age is 70, right?
Like, fuck, like.
It's
again,
it's going to be difficult to convey the ramifications of this and to even explain to them like what what is the difference between like actual like proprietary code that is copyrighted vice just an API that is essentially just a script. Like, it's just essentially like a language and text that allows it to work together, but it's not the functioning code. But to clearly distinguish that for these justices. Oh, get the hell out of here. Like,
yeah, well, and while we're on the subject of people way past retirement age making huge life altering decisions for the rest of the world, I'm going to be like your social media browsers right now and just tell you go vote. I'm going to intrude on your life right now and ask you if you're registered, like everything else does when you log into it. Because we can't have this, guys. We cannot have these people making these kinds of decisions. Like, this is the scariest part of that to me, is that nine people or five, what is it for? Because where is it? Is it the SCOTUS is overhearing this?
Yeah.
So it's going to the federal Supreme Court? I wasn't sure if it was in a state.
No, this is the Supreme Court. You know, Justice Kavanaugh is the youngest person on this bench.
Eight justices that don't know dick about any of this are going to make this huge decision that is going to potentially tank tech stocks and just have overreach or ramifications for anything that has ones and zeros in it. It's going to be insane.
Like I said, it's concerning. You know, when you have Justice Kavanaugh, who's the youngest person, asking them, like, how is this any different than copying a song? Like, you're copying a language. And it's like, dude, it's completely different. You know, the lawyer on the side of Google tried to explain to them. It's like, they were talking about, like, the fact that it's like the QWERTY keyboard. It's like, yeah, not everybody had to have a QWERTY-style keyboard, but once that became the standard, it's like granting somebody the patent to QWERTY now and then telling every computer manufacturer, it's like, no, you have to come up with your own way to do a keyboard.
It'd be like the guy who invented brake pads holding the copyright over every car ever fucking made.
Yeah. It's very similar. I watched a YouTube video from a tech blogger that talked about it. It's he likened it to the steering wheel. It's like, not every vehicle needed to have a steering wheel, but for the safety and the functionality that everybody can just jump in a car and know what the hell they're doing, like, it made sense that everybody adopted the same similar platform. And that's essentially what everybody did through Java. Java became the standard platform, but everybody made their own unique copyrightable material within it, but they used that as the language to drive along the same highway.
Yeah, a lot of what drove tech was the fact that a lot of things were considered to be open source. You know, that was what drove a lot of innovation in tech. And now you can't just retroactively go back and say, yeah, no, it's not open source. I own that. Yeah. And you can't use it anymore.
And then if you're an independent, you know, programmer, or you're trying to make some modifications to other programs, you have to come up with your entire own language and API interface to even start the process, which would kill innovation. It would kill, like, again, the fate of this is in the hands of eight justices with an average age nearing 70, and they have to somehow understand the ramifications and also understand that when they open this, if they rule against Google here and make Google pay out this money to Oracle, the shitstorm of lawsuits are going to happen in the tech industry of anybody who's ever had their API borrowed or used in order for interoperability or compatibility or whatever. Everybody's getting sued. This won't go well.
No, not at all.
All right. Well, I guess we can move from that bigger nerd topics, and you know, I guess we can just end the show on some lighthearted stories.
Do CRISPR first.
All right. Well, a big congratulations to Nobel Prize winning a team, winning the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for CRISPR. We talked about CRISPR months ago, and CRISPR is just a fascinating piece of, you know, we can call it tech in the sense that it's very tech forward in gene editing. And Nobel Prize goes to two scientists who have really refined it to the point that, you know, it's becoming, you know, unlocking our genome and being able to surgically go in and make corrections to correct immune deficiencies and to correct all kinds of genetic issues goes to U.S. Women in charge of this program for CRISPR-Cas9.
Yeah, the more you hear and the more you learn about the capabilities of CRISPR and where that's heading, it's amazingly scary. It has so many great, it's like nuclear fission. It could go so many ways to benefit humanity, or you can make an A-bomb. It's so crazy, and what's going to happen in the next 20 years with using CRISPR is going to be mind-boggling. It's one of those things that I look forward to seeing where it goes, but I also am very scared to see where it goes.
Yeah, I think especially how accessible it is, it's actually not a lot of like high cost tech to do it. So,
you know, as far as like chemistry goes, it's like the 3D printer of chemistry equipment.
Yeah.
You know, and next thing you know, you're going to be, you know, like, yeah, rewriting all of human existence with it. It's nuts.
Yeah, well, and then that can take us to our final story here. And
this is great.
This one is it's an interesting one.
We always like to end the show on a nice lighthearted story.
And this one is about a smart device. A smart male chastity device that we probably should have thrown this in the hacker segment.
If you're wearing one of these things, I don't know how smart you are, motherfucker. Yeah.
So it's a smart chastity device that it's been warned by the manufacturer that it can be controlled by hackers, even down to the point that you could just physically be locked in this thing. And the company is so concerned about it that they even went so far
Before we go on this, why don't you explain to some of our listeners what exactly a chastity device is?
So, I've looked at the picture of this device, and I've been trying to figure out, where am I putting everything here? Yeah. The way I look at it, it looks like it's got a little loophole. I'm assuming... that's where you'll put the beans.
Yeah, if you get the beans in, where's the Franco?
I think the Franco's in the tube that's got the branding and everything on it. It's even got a little hole, so I'm assuming you could still relieve yourself while wearing it. It's a weird device, and if you're putting this on you. Man, I don't know how many times you cheated on your wife that you woke up with this thing on you one day, but.
This is scary. Is like four steps after shared Facebook account. Like anytime you see one of your buddies has a shared Facebook account with his old lady, you know he's three steps away.
He's only three
from
steps
the,
away
from the smart male chastity device before his wife just fucking locks down his junk with a phone app. The funny thing though is that the company that makes it released a video of how to pry it off of you with a screwdriver. Like, so they actually have a video on their YouTube channel and on their website that's like, well, if your junk ever does get hacked, don't worry. You can pry this metal cage off your dick with a screwdriver.
Yeah. So again, The more Internet of Things devices you bring into your life, the greater the security
lock
risk.
Lock your front door.
So this is one that maybe you just skip this one.
Yeah. Don't leave your home network unsecured. Make sure you turn your Bluetooth off. Oh, right. God. Internet of Things, well, it is.
All right. Well, as requested, we ended the show with the dick jokes. Yeah. And we can go ahead and thank you for listening to the Nerd Cantina show here. Episode 111 in the books.
Trip and, ones.
And if you got a moment, go ahead and give us a rating review or join us over at thenerdcantina.com/community or find us over at Facebook and discuss your thoughts on, I don't know, smart chastity devices.
Yeah. I'm leaving this one. I'm done. I'm done. I can't. I'm going to say something really bad. But with joining us at thenerdcantina.com/community, we are trying to get our first book club up and going. So first book club will be Bent Heavens by Daniel Krauss. He has joined us on the show 3 times this year. First book that he was promoting was Bent Heavens. It's a nice sci-fi thriller for the month of October. Join us in the community, read a book, come and hang out with us for our book club meeting. You might be on the show. It'll be a good time. So, 700 members strong, and it's amazing how many people aren't ready to read a book yet.
Everybody read their books at the beginning of COVID and realized that they don't like it, and now it's over. So, all right. Well, with all that said, thanks again, nerds, and we'll talk to you next week.
See ya.